Hello everyone, Neil Patelia, thank you for downloading the latest episode of the Indian Startup Show. Today I speak to Ryan and Rohit. They are the co-founders of an exciting new startup called Crypto University. It's a global university to help people understand the power of blockchain technologies and its application across different industries. Exciting stuff. So we talk about a wide range of subjects, including how they got started through creating a successful Indiegogo campaign. We separate the hype and reality of cryptocurrency and blockchain, Bitcoin and smart contracts. They also give smart advice on investing, thoughts on the Indian startup scene and what they've learned on their startup journey, and finally some cricket chat as well. So please enjoy the show. Thank you. Hi guys, welcome to the Indian Startup Show.
Thank you.
Yeah,
glad to be here.
Excellent. If you could tell the listeners what you're building, please.
So yeah, Rohit and I are working on the Crypto University. So the Crypto University is a global online school for blockchain and its applications. So put very simply, the aim is to teach people starting right from the very basics of what a blockchain is and getting up to some pretty advanced applications in a number of industries.
Excellent. Where did the idea come from? What was the light bulb moment?
So basically 2017 was a crazy year for like the crypto market as a whole, where there were a lot of tokens and coins and all that were really appreciating in value. Both me and Ryan used to keep discussing about investing in this market and stuff like that. But as we started learning more and more about this, we were just like, hey, the applications behind this and the underlying technology is really where things are at, and basically neither me nor Ryan, we want to be considered as fortune tellers, or we stay far away from the speculative investing side of things in terms of this is the coin you need to buy or anything like that in our courses. What we're sort of really fascinated by, and we think that more people should really learn and understand about, is the underlying technology, which is blockchain and its applications.
Excellent. How is it going so far then? How many people have signed up?
Yeah, so we actually started off selling our sort of first course, which is called the Crypto Masterclass,
yeah,
back in Jan. And we did it through an Indiegogo campaign, which did really well. We got about 50-odd paying students through that campaign. Pretty much sold everything out in terms of what we planned to sell. So since then, we've added about 20-odd students, paying students, that is. And we have about 700
or so students on there.
On the free courses.
Yeah. The other big thing is, over the last few months, we've also sort of gotten a lot of clarity on how to sort of move this forward, because these things may not look like big numbers or anything like that, but we have a lot of interesting things sort of planned out. So right now, the teachers that we have on a platform are basically me and Ryan. Me coming from I'm a Carnegie Mellon grad, worked in the Valley and in New York for a while, and I come in from a very sort of technology side of things and building side of things, whereas Ryan, he comes in from an applications point of view, and that's what really excites him. What we have sort of planned out right now is really getting a lot more experts onto the platform, to actually teach different aspects of it. So specific aspects of Ethereum and building applications on Ethereum, and then specific applications for other blockchains out there. So really going after experts to teach a lot of this curriculum for the Crypto University.
You said that you sold out the course. Is that what you expected?
it was way more than we expected. Yeah. Basically, I've worked in startups before and stuff like that, and tried to build my own company before. I spent an entire year sort of trying to build this perfect product before I went ahead and tried to sell it, and then sort of got a lot of pushback saying that there's no market for it. So this time around, I was pretty adamant, and Ryan was all on board with this of just sort of pre-selling things and really sort of setting that out there, making sure and testing out this sort of demand. We definitely had 600% of like our Indiegogo.
Yeah, we overfunded by 600%. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was definitely the good kind of surprise.
And the thing is that our courses also, you know, we pride ourselves on keeping quality content. You know, it's not like a $10 course or something like that. We've had students pay up to $199 for a course, mm-hmm. and even then said that, you know, hey, I would have paid even more for it, you know. So
who are you actually targeting then? Who are the actual customers?
So currently, at least of our paying student set, we've had a whole variety of people. So right from sort of university students, you know, who are just sort of 19, 20 years old, all the way to some really experienced professionals who, you know, worked in their respective industries for a couple of decades. So in terms of the kind of people who are interested in learning about this, it's a really broad spectrum. But at least currently, through the Crypto Masterclass and some of the other courses that we are going to put out in the next week or two, we're really targeting people who, you know, who are very interested in getting their first sort of taster of what blockchain is. You know, what is this thing that everyone's talking about? Why are cryptocurrencies gaining and falling in value so rapidly? So it's, you know, it's right now we're catered towards people who probably don't know much at all, but want to get up to a stage where they are not only confident talking about it, but can actually initiate projects in their industries, in their companies. And as Rohit mentioned, you know, we're soon going to put out a course on Ethereum development. So that's going to focus on the development side of it.
Sounds exciting. So who actually owns blockchain then? Does anyone actually own blockchain?
So that's actually a very interesting question. So the way to sort of think about it is like, firstly, there are many different blockchains out there. You know, there are like both public blockchains as well as private blockchains. And the blockchain is essentially, you can almost think of it as like one giant database, you know, and anyone who wants to sort of, let's take the Bitcoin blockchain, for example, anyone wants to participate in the Bitcoin blockchain as like a miner or like they need to have a copy of that blockchain. So nobody actually owns the Bitcoin blockchain.
There are private blockchains which are owned either by one company or by a consortium of companies. So I know a number of banks are working on building something where they're all going to be co-owners. But the important thing to understand is that, you know, whether a blockchain is private or is totally decentralized and is open to anyone, very much boils down to, firstly, the ideology of the people behind it. So obviously in the case of banks, you know, a lot of what they are trying is just to bring in efficiency into some of their operations. They are not at all interested in decentralizing money because that means that they will hold less power over, you know, over the financial system. Whereas, you know, some of the more sort of decentralized blockchains have been set up with a very different ideology. You know, people are not wanting to control anything. And therefore, the way that they are approaching things and the way that they are trying to build things is trying to open up this technology to the world and let anyone who wants to participate make use of it. So that's going to be a continuing theme in the next 5 to 10 years as far as blockchain is concerned, because you even see governments wanting to build their own cryptocurrencies, and you know, so anyone wanting to understand the space also has to take a step back and say, okay, why is this particular organization or country or group of companies wanting to build this? You know, there is the real motive and then there is an ulterior motive with anything. And so it's important to really dig deep and figure out what those motives are.
You mentioned Bitcoin. Is it still worth investing in Bitcoin? what's the word on the street now?
I like to stay away from offering like speculative investing advice because that really is what it is.
But were you surprised that it went through the roof last year?
Yeah,
that was a crazy time. Yeah. I mean, and it all happened. So I was doing some analysis yesterday on, so I just downloaded a bunch of data and was doing some analysis, and all of that happened, you know, in the space of about 10 or 11 days. And yeah, I mean, you know, stuff like that does happen in smaller markets, and cryptocurrency definitely is a small market, you know, a few hundred billion. But, you know, as the market matures with better regulation and as it grows in size, those sort of moves are going to become less likely and less frequent. You know, coming back to your point of, is it still worth investing in? So, you know, obviously I spend quite a lot of time thinking about questions like these. And it's, you know, one big thing that I see coming in, especially with the SEC in the US coming out with certain rules as to whether a coin or a token should be a registered security or not. I think what we'll find is that a lot of these tokens that have come out in initial coin offerings will, over the next 2 to 3 years, be deemed illegal.
Oh, okay.
So you are going to see a lot of value eroded from these markets. And therefore, it is the coins that are truly decentralized, like Bitcoin, Litecoin, and maybe just a handful of others. And this is just my sort of way of looking at the world. Those are the coins that are going to end up holding value. Because if a lot of these coins that were issued in ICOs are deemed illegal, well, they're just going to fall away. So that's just sort of one way to answer that question.
Yeah. But again, none of this is investment advice. Anyone putting money into this should, like, you know, do it at their own sort of discretion.
Well, yeah, totally. I mean, and that's one thing we stay away from.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, a lot of people ask us, hey, I heard of this coin. What do you think? And you know, it's almost impossible to say. You know, the most important thing is look at the team. What is the track record of the team? What are they trying to build? Does it actually make sense on a blockchain? Do you gain any value out of building it on a blockchain? And then accordingly, you know, put your money in. But there's no sort of way of saying where this is all headed. So got to be careful.
So for the average guy on the street then, why should they care about blockchain then?
So I think the first application of blockchain is clearly currency, right? And that's sort of what's taken the world by storm, you know, captured everyone's imagination. And so if you get on a Twitter or LinkedIn or any of these platforms, you'll see that there are all sorts of people who are so excited about this, right? And the reasons are pretty clear. I mean, if I was to sitting in Bangalore, if I was to transfer money to you in Manchester, in the UK, it's going to take a minimum of 2 days, possibly longer, depending on the bank I am banking with and the bank you are banking with and whether they have a relationship and all of that. Using cryptocurrency, it can happen in 5 seconds. You know, so that is clearly a very big change as to what the financial world is used to, as to what people are used to when they use, you know, financial products. So that is obviously one big reason for people. But having said that, there are a lot of other applications that are being built across a number of industries that can fundamentally change the way we transact with each other. You know, in a world where, you know, Facebook and Cambridge Analytica are able to pretty much sift through anything that we put online, a lot of these technologies which offer really strong privacy do have a place in the world, you know? And I'm not saying that only people who are, you know, hell-bent and doing illegal things are going to use them. No, this is for everyone. I mean, if you want to preserve your privacy as you transact and communicate on the internet, these technologies can help you do that in a very secure way. So, you know, we're just sort of starting off in terms of some of the capabilities of this technology, but I'm pretty sure in the next 5 years that, you know, a lot of people, you know, the guy on the street will be using this not only for money, but for other things as well.
Excellent. Okay. Actually, let's go back to investments then. sounds quite interesting. What are people, what's worth investing then? Forget about cryptocurrency. I mean, in your you've got an investment background. What trends are you seeing at the moment? Just for our listeners, you know, they may have some money they want to invest in.
So I personally, just because I don't have a lot of time to spend on my own investments, I've basically been putting my money into ETFs and into mutual funds. And obviously, being based in India, most of my investments are in Indian ETFs and Indian mutual funds. Mm-hmm. So that sort of takes a lot of the worry away, takes a lot of the thinking away. Obviously, if being an emerging market, Indian equities have had a really strong run in the last couple of years. So some of the funds that I'm invested in have returned, you know, upwards of 25% a year, which is really good for shares. That's obviously one aspect of it. There are other emerging markets like Vietnam, Malaysia, Turkey that are also doing well. But then again, it depends on how accessible those are. You know, not everyone is able to access global investing, at least as far as stocks are concerned. And there again, that's something that I'm very bullish on in terms of blockchain helping remove some of those barriers, you know. So as we progress as far as tokenization of assets is concerned, anyone anywhere in the world is going to be able to invest in assets irrespective of where those assets are originating from, you know. And so I mean, that's something I'm excited about. So but in terms of my own portfolio, I don't have like individual stocks. I just don't have the time to do research on that. And also, I'm a firm believer in the power of information to impact investment returns. And as as a retail investor sitting in India, I just don't have access to that information. So in the absence of that information, the next best thing I can do is to just put it into funds and ETFs and not worry about, you know, about the things that probably the fund managers and the hedge fund guys think about.
Yeah, might have to start investing in North Korea soon, I think.
Let's see.
What about gold? Obviously, gold's been around for years and people always invest in that. That seems a safe bet. Is that still the same, you think?
I mean, that is one way of actually looking at it. You know, there are still a lot of people that do end up investing in gold. And in fact, Bitcoin in a lot of ways can be considered like digital gold, you know, because it's the more I think about it, the less it feels like a currency and more it feels like a fixed commodity like gold. So, yeah, I mean, go for it if you think that, you know, it's something that people that will appreciate in value over time.
I mean, in India, there are a lot of people who buy gold. Yeah. So physical gold, this is, you know, not investing in gold ETFs or anything. So that sort of investment is more like, you know, the thought process behind that is it's going to be a backstop in case anything bad happens in life. Or you lose a lot of money, or you, whatever, family feuds, you lose assets, whatever it might be. That gold that you own, whether it's in the form of earrings or necklaces or gold bars or whatever it is going to have a value for sure. You know, the rupee might not have a value in 10 years. Nobody knows, you know, depending on governance and economy and all that. But gold, as the world's most precious metal, is going to have a value. So, I mean, at least demand in India is not going down. I don't see it going down anytime in the future. So that's always a decent investment.
Always jewelry.
Yeah. One thing I will say, though, is another thing that will always have value is just sort of how you educate yourself, you know. So just sort of like, you know, stay up to date, read a lot, really understand, like, you know, what exactly is happening in the world, how your industry is sort of changing. That's just across the board. The most successful people I know are people that just sort of like just hungry for information, just hungry to just sort of keep learning and upskilling themselves. So
I suppose you need to be a risk taker as well, I suppose. Is that right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about you two guys. How did you guys meet then?
Yeah, so me and Ryan actually met all the way back in, well, I don't know if Ryan knew me back then, but we both went to the same school back in Dubai. Yeah. You know, so Ryan was, I guess, 3 years senior to me. So everyone knew of Ryan because he was like the captain of the school cricket team and, like, you know, he was playing for the UAE national team and all of that. So everyone knew of Ryan. And like when I sort of, I was working in New York before I moved back to Bangalore. And when I moved back, I was like, oh, who do I know from Modern Eye in Bangalore? And Ryan happened to be there. So it was just over Facebook being like, hey, do you want to meet up? I'm new to the city. And yeah, that's how, like, I guess I met Ryan again in Bangalore. So
actually, you mentioned cricket then.
Yep.
Who's going to win the series between India and England then?
Oh, India and England. That's so the thing is.
Actually, England got beat by Scotland, so, you know.
Yeah, I think I'll be very surprised if England wins. but you never know, you know. We historically, we haven't done too well in England, simply because it's so different to what the Indian players are used to. So yeah, as long as Kohli does well, we stand a very good chance. If he doesn't do well, and you know he hasn't done well in England so far, then it's pretty open, I would say. So, but it's exciting. I'm more excited about the World Cup next year.
Yeah. What happened in the Champions Trophy then? Because obviously India were favourites against Pakistan but got beat. What happened there then?
That was last year, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that was... well, I mean, I remember watching that game and India basically just got outplayed. There's no other way to describe it. There's no point trying to make excuses because the Pakistani bowlers were just too good, you know? Pretty much unplayable. And... yeah, I mean, they deserve to win. There's no two ways about that.
Oh, awesome stuff. Go on.
Yeah, sorry. No, I was saying, and you know, it's been a while since Pakistan had won anything. They anyway get to play such less international cricket. So I was happy for them, actually. You know, it's good for the game.
Cool. Will you actually teach mining as well?
Well, sure. I mean, if you find someone who has a decent amount of experience with mining for different... cryptocurrencies, yeah, I don't see why not, you know?
We have thought about that because there is potentially a lot of demand, you know. But again, one of the things about mining is that it's quite heavily influenced by regulation. So it's only people with a lot of, at least as far as Bitcoin is concerned, it's only people with a lot of money that are going into mining.
Yeah.
So it's not sort of, you know, like you're sitting at home and you've got a free laptop that's not doing anything and you set it up. Those days are gone,
especially for Bitcoin. There are some newer coins and all of that where it is a lot easier to mine for them. But even then, it's just sort of like, so I'll give you an example. Like, essentially to actually solve, to actually mine for a coin, you need to almost, in the simplest sense, solve a math puzzle.
Yeah.
All right. And there are different sort of algorithms that you can actually end up doing to actually end up figuring out the solution faster than everyone else. Mm-hmm. Right. Now the way the system is sort of evolving is like, people are sort of like building these application specific integrated circuits, you know, just sort of hard coding what exactly needs to be done onto a chip, you know, and then sort of running their servers on that chip, you know, or on thousands of those chips, you know. So it's just one of those things where, like, I won't be able to do it on my own MacBook Pro, you know, or anything like that. There are some coins where you probably could, but is it really valuable for you to do that, you know? The way me and Ryan sort of think about it is, like, the sort of tokens and coins that will have value are the ones that actually have utility mm-hmm. and that people will actually end up using, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
Excellent. What about smart contracts? Is that something you'll talk about in the, yeah. in the courses? Yeah.
If you
just want to explain to our listeners who, you know, may not know what smart contracts are, perhaps.
Yeah, sure. So to sort of understand what smart contracts are, it's important to understand how exactly web applications and current sort of systems sort of work. So let's take an app like, let's say, Facebook, right? When you're sort of like posting a picture onto Facebook, something like that, what ends up happening? You use your phone to actually take a picture and you post it. What ends up happening is that that photo essentially gets stored on the Facebook infrastructure somewhere, and they probably have their own system to sort of make sure that, you know, this information is protected and so on and so forth, mm-hmm. right? So there's this sort of centralized server over there which is running a whole bunch of different things, which your Facebook app on your phone can actually talk to. Now, the way you think about like smart contracts, right? Smart contracts are always built on top of a specific kind of blockchain, yeah. you know? So let's take Ethereum, for example. Ethereum is basically this sort of, let's say, the best way to describe it is this constantly running application, mm-hmm. you know? A smart contract is almost like a specific kind of function on that particular application. You know, and you can sort of think of it almost like programmable money and programmable tasks. Mm-hmm. Let's say if Ryan asks me for money, send him $50, you know, yeah. like those are in a very simplistic sense, something that, you know, you could actually program into a smart contract. And like, you know, the obvious things that might come into your head are like, oh yeah, like let's pay my rent on the first of the month and let's put that on a smart contract. And those are things that could, that again is solved by centralized systems, but this idea of smart contracts have a lot of applications in fields like, you know, supply chain and so on and so forth, and making that entire space a lot more transparent.
Mm-hmm. Yes, essentially they're just, you know, pieces of software that sort of replace human input. Mm-hmm. And when you try and replace human input by code, you know, you basically bring down the chances of error and of fraud. But then, you know, with code, obviously, there are other security issues that come into it,
yep.
Which is why we've not yet seen any real big application of smart contracts, because there is that issue of theft and security as well. So.
How does it work between you two guys then? Does one do the sales, one does the tech side of things, or how does it all work?
Yeah, so right now, I guess in a lot of ways, I do a lot of the development side of things and the design side of things and stuff like that. Both of us create the content around, like, you know, for the crypto university and stuff like that. But yeah, still early days, so where we both sort of have our opinions and, like, you know, ideas on how to actually sort of move things forward. So
yeah, I mean, at this point it's more about just doing whatever's needed you know, to keep moving forward, as opposed to splitting things up. But Roy definitely is sort of he's the tech guy, so he's you know, he's driving the platform and what we're doing on it in terms of, you know, how we're putting our content out there and what's going to be easiest for our users to, you know, to sort of learn from and things like that. So,
is it still fun?
Yeah,
of course. Like, we wouldn't be doing it otherwise. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, what I love about this is just the fact that, you know, just we're just learning new things about the space itself every single day. You know, like, I think me and Ryan probably this is not me trying to brag or anything, but we genuinely believe that we know a lot more about what's happening in this space and, like, the kind of applications that are coming out and the kinds of projects that people are working on than most people out there, you know? And, like, it's fascinating to see, you know, a lot of these projects will fail, but some of them will succeed, you know? And it's just sort of like being in the early stages of, like, a new seminal piece of technology that's coming out and, like, just sort of having this sort of you know, close look at it, mm-hmm. it's great for us.
Mm-hmm. So it's the hype is real then.
No. So let's put it this way. The hype over the coins and tokens and stuff like that, I'm skeptical, you know. But I'm usually a skeptic with most things. The technology, however, I'm long-term bullish on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are like flaws, short-term challenges that it faces, but I'm long-term bullish on it.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Obviously, we have a lot of listeners who are thinking of doing their own startups. What advice would you give them?
I think both me and Ryan will have a lot to talk about, especially Ryan, since he's doing like two very different companies, yeah. Pretty much. For me, the way I sort of would, piece of advice I'd give them is start it off as a project, you know, rather than as a startup or a company or something like that, being like, hey, this is one of the things that we want to build, which would be cool.
Yeah.
Ship as quickly as possible and get to at least one paying customer who isn't your friend or your family or anything like that, because the way you sort of look at things, it just sort of changes completely. And be willing to sort of iterate, you know, it's whatever you put out in the beginning, it's not going to be perfect. Mm. Be okay with that, but like set apart time to actually iterate on it and make things better after collecting like paying customer feedback, you know, that's sort of what I would advise.
Mm. Yeah, I think the only thing I'd add to what Rohit said was, so this is the first time I'm working with someone who has a completely different background to me. Mm. So very often, especially when you're doing your first company, the temptation is to go with, you know, people who are very similar to you. They went to the same college or they worked at the same company as you. They might even have like the same sort of skill set. Mm. And it's very easy to say, oh yeah, like I know him well and, you know, let's do it. But what I've sort of learned from working with Rohit is, you know, there's a lot of value to be gained in working with someone who's got a very different background to you. Mm. So like, you know, I'm learning a lot from him in terms of, you know, how to go about sort of building an internet company. Mm. Because he has that experience. You know, he's done that for the last 7-8 years, whatever it's. You know, so that's something, you know, I see a lot of my friends, they don't really think of it like that. You know, they're always going around looking for co-founders who are very similar to them in very many respects. Mm. So, that's another thing, which is, you know, which I've learned this time, basically, the more different you are, the more ideas you get. And,
Yeah. And be okay with like, you know, disagreeing with your co-founder, because, you know, me and Ryan sometimes have very different opinions on what needs to happen. But what I always tell him is like, hey, and both of us, you know, we come in from the best interests of the crypto university. It's not about our ego or anything like that. It's about like what's going to be best for our students and instructors and that sort of, you know, line we take. And that's how we make decisions on what needs to happen.
What's your view on the startup scene in India now? Because obviously, Ryan, I spoke to you 2 years ago. You know, it was booming. Yeah. You know, what is it now? Is it still booming now?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think you know, the whole Walmart Flipkart deal has given a lot of sort of impetus to the system, because a lot of people, and myself included, you know, it started sort of thinking that where is all this headed? I mean, all of these companies are raising ridiculous amounts of money, but then at some point investors want to be paid back, you know, and then obviously like some investors in Flipkart now have made exits of
157x.
So, yeah. You know, so now a lot of people are seeing, okay, there is a lot of possibility to sell to international companies and obviously to grow organically, to build very large companies. So there are other companies now which are pretty close to an exit of some sort, like Ola and, you know, Paytm, a number of those, you know. So, there's a lot going on. A lot of people willing to try things, you know, to grow large businesses starting from pretty much nothing. So yeah, it's really interesting. You always bump into people doing really interesting, and not only in the tech space. You know, I meet people in a lot of your traditional physical businesses as well, but they're doing really interesting things, whether it's restaurants or consumer goods or education, healthcare, whatever it might be. Fitness is a big trend now. A lot of money being pumped into the whole fitness industry here. So yeah, there's an awful lot happening. It's exciting and it's good to be part of.
Yeah. Well, one thing I would add there is this is one of the trends that I see changing a little bit is if you look at one of the big things that was lacking in the Indian ecosystem for a long time was just sort of good mentorship, you know, like especially in the internet startup side of things, you know, like these are entrepreneurs, first time entrepreneurs. The people they look to for, like, you know, advice and stuff like that didn't exist, you know, in this country, like someone capable in that. There are a few exceptions, but there wasn't a good slew of mentors out there to be like, hey, I made this mistake. Don't do that again, kind of things, you know, which is why, like, a lot of companies actually ended up, like, failing and, like, going through the motions, you know. But you also end up learning a lot through your sort of failures in terms of what ended up happening. So I'm seeing a lot of, like, second-time founders, you know, who are not making those same kinds of mistakes they made earlier in terms of just raising a ridiculous amount of money, having, like, huge marketing plans without really having an underlying product under it, you know, and those same people are sort of giving advice to the next breed of first-time entrepreneurs, you know, to be like, hey, don't do this. I made this mistake. Don't make the same mistake I did, you know. It was glamorous for a while, but really it's not worth it. So that's another sort of change I'm getting. So just the market itself becoming a lot more mature now.
So what advice would you give to first-time founders then?
No, so like I said, right, like try and get to revenue first, forget about how polished your product is. And I'm a product guy, you know, like I try to get things as pixel perfect as possible and stuff like that. But like really like get to a paying customer for whatever you're doing as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And the paying part is very important here because people will say they'll end up using your product, but them actually paying to use your product, whatever it is a completely different story, you know? So, and, you know, trust your, and like listen to your customer feedback, but don't let that drive your company, you know, in terms of like collect feedback from a lot of people and make an informed decision. So.
Do you think anyone can be an entrepreneur then?
I think, to be very honest, like entrepreneurship in a lot of ways is like most things in life, you know? If you keep at it, you know, you will become more and more successful and better at it. You know, your first company might not work out. Your second company might not. Your third might not, you know, but like you need to make sure that you learn stuff from every single opportunity that you have to actually build something. And then eventually, you know, you'll end up hitting on something big, you know, and something interesting because you're just going to have this unfair advantage or everyone else out there. And, you know, yeah, I actually really believe in that. Like, if you look at Travis Kalanick, he had, like, you know, his first company was, like he was sued for literally billions of dollars, you know, and it was, like, based on the stories I read and stuff like that, it was just, like, a very traumatic experience for him. But he didn't quit being an entrepreneur. He quit that company, so.
What would you say is the most surprising thing about your entrepreneurial journey then?
I guess for me, well, I'll be perfectly honest here. Like, I didn't like expect this sort of. I thought of a crypto university as a sort of like project, you know, of like, hey, this is one of those things we're going to do on the side. We're going to learn a bunch, all of those kinds of things, and then it's going to be one of those things that will help, you know, me personally, because both me and Ryan were like, this is just a cool thing to work on. You know, it's such an interesting project to work on. But based on like the sort of like, you know, feedback that we've been getting from the students and like, you know, how we're sort of seeing the space evolving and stuff like that, I'm extremely sort of bullish on it. You know, it's, I don't want to call it an accidental company, but I definitely didn't think about it as a company when we started out. Me and Ryan were like, all right, hey, let's do this. We clearly know a lot about this. Let's see if we can actually, there are other people out there who'd be willing to learn about things that we know, you know? And now it's just like, you know, about improving that over and over again. But that was my biggest thing. But go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, just looking at it from the perspective of a journey, I think the one thing that has surprised me is, you know, over time, over the last 4-5 months. So when we started this and, you know, we went all out on our Facebook and our Twitter and, like, you know, to our friends and family, hey, like, look at what we're doing and all of that. And, you know, a lot of them, you know, a lot of them were very skeptical. They're like, oh my God, like, this guy is like, he's trying to like go into crypto and stuff, and he's just lost his mind, you know? These people now in June 2018 are, you know, pinging me on WhatsApp and email every second day saying, hey man, I'm reading up about this. I don't understand it. Can you explain it to me? You know? So like basically people are slowly starting to, you know, as you mentioned, separate the hype from the real stuff. And there is value in the real stuff. So for me, what's been really interesting is just seeing people, you know, move from a point of, you're crazy, I don't know why you're doing this, to, you know, pinging me and asking me questions and are clearly interested in all this. That's been a pleasant surprise for me. You know, and so hopefully I can convert a lot more people, thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, into thinking that, yes, there are a lot of issues with the space, but there are a lot of good things as well. And, you know, so that's, yeah.
Good stuff. Last few questions then. Do you think you'll have an offline version of what you do at the moment? Or is it going to be 100% online?
Yeah, that is definitely something that we've been sort of talking a lot about, you know, in terms of actually like running conferences, running offline sort of workshops, running, you know, these sort of expert seminars offline, you know. It's just a matter of time, to be honest. You know, right now we're just focused on the things that, you know, we can actually like work scale on. But like even right now, we have like conducted sort of seminars at WeWork and stuff like that, you know, explaining some of the interesting trends that are happening in the space.
Yeah, I mean, there is clearly a lot of interest. We have another workshop coming up next month. This is not something we're charging for. We've just been invited at another co-working space in Bangalore called Springboard. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are people who are wanting to come and at least sort of listen and get a feel for what crypto is, for what blockchain is. So yeah, that's definitely something we need to think about, just think through a model basically. But there is a lot of interest, that's for sure, at least in Bangalore.
Yeah, most people are interested in learning more about this, you know. It's just like most stuff that they find online and stuff like that, it's just not very good, you know. It's just, yeah,
true.
So yeah,
excellent. Okay, last question then. For people who want more information on the Crypto University, what must they do?
Well, you can definitely check out our website. It's www.thecryptouniversity.io. You can just Google for us as well. Just Google The Crypto University and we'll show up. If you want to shoot us an email, you can shoot us an email at hello@thecryptouniversity.io and we will definitely be responding to you. So.
Guys, thank you for coming on the show today. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot, Neil.
Yeah, we loved it.
Always great talking to you.
Excellent. Thanks for that, guys, for coming on the show today. Thank you for supporting the podcast. I'll be back next week. Now, if you want to come on the show, send me an email, hello@neilpatel.co or tweet @IndianStartupSH. Or you can go to facebook.com/IndianStartupShow. We'd love to connect. Thank you and goodbye.